Now, last week on the programme, we brought you the story of a listener waiting 12 minutes for someone to answer the phone when she dialed 999 for an ambulance for a young man she had found having a seizure by the side of the road. Well, we can reveal further concerns this morning about the ambulance service. The Northern Ireland Ambulance Service aims to provide the Northern Trust area on a Saturday night through to a Sunday morning with 12 emergency crews. This covers the local council areas of Antrim, Ballymoney, Carrickfergus, Coleraine, Cookstown, Larne, Macrofelt, Moyle and Newton Abbey. So you can get a sense there of the spread that those 12 emergency crews are covering. Last weekend, not 12, it was only able to provide 5 NE crews. On Saturday, the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service had to call in support from the private and voluntary ambulance services. Bran McNeill is Director of Operations from the NIAS. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. First of all, thanks for coming on. The public will be pretty concerned about this, Brian. What went on?
Well, Stephen, Saturday night, as you say, we had planned to have 12 of our emergency crews operating that night, that evening. Due to sickness, due to leave, and not being able to fill those vacant posts. Usually we fill them with overtime. We dropped our own levels down to 5. We did bring in voluntary and private, which is our contingency, and we did bring in rapid response paramedics. We had them in place as well. And we also had support from other areas to take us through the night. So that was what Saturday night looked like. On Sunday, we were back to full complement.
On Saturday night, were there any significant delays in attending to people?
I've been made aware of one delay for 45 minutes. I haven't got the detail of the call, the nature of the problem that we were responding to. And we're investigating that, Stephen.
Yeah, I think you were made aware of that by us, weren't you?
Yes, we were made aware of that by you. That's
yeah, and this is someone who says that it took 40 minutes for an ambulance, which is unacceptable any day of the week, right?
Well, it depends on what the nature of the problem is, Stephen. If it's a life-threatening call, then yeah, certainly it is unacceptable. Cardiac arrest would be a good example. But for other conditions, we could take, and we often do agree with the caller, times of up to an hour, 2 hours to respond, because it doesn't warrant a blue light emergency.
Well, here's what we're being told, and this is the reason why we contacted you in the first place. We've been told that one of the incidents at the weekend was a red alert. In other words, that the target is to get to that within 8 minutes. And because of a lack of coverage, it took 40 minutes.
Well, as I said, Stephen, I don't have the detail. I haven't been provided with the detail of the location of the call or what the incident was about.
Well, surely your systems would tell you that if there was a red alert, you should know by Tuesday morning. If
Stephen,
on Saturday,
every call into our control room, a 999 call starts as a red alert. Our very highly trained call takers then ascertain more information from the caller, and that red alert can change from a red 8-minute response to a green, which would be an hour or 2 hour response.
So there's nothing in your systems, Brian, to flag up to you if something that is a critical situation where you're trying to get out to someone within 8 minutes has resulted in a 40-minute delay. There's nothing in the system to flag that up.
No, wait, you know, that's not what I'm saying, Stephen. You're asking me about a call of which I don't have the detail to respond to the specifics on, if I get the detail of that, I can investigate it and respond specifically on that.
Sure, but we would have to give you the detail. I'm not trying to trick you here. There's nothing in this system to flag up if a critical incident resulted in a massive delay.
Yes, we do have every call that we receive. We monitor the times. We monitor the time that it came in, the time that it was picked up and responded to, the time the ambulance arrived, the time the ambulance arrived at scene. So we have all of that detail. We can tell you how many of those calls we made in time, if it required in 8 minutes, and we can tell you by how far we have missed the call and by how many minutes. and we can tell you the average response time for the whole of the area.
Sure. I think we have that detail. I think the importance of this story, Brian, is that it came from within your organization. That's where the source is.
Yes.
So it's a concerned person within your organization contacting the Nolan Show saying, look, the cover was so scarce, it was so bad at the weekend that a red alert, which should have been answered in 8 minutes, took 40 minutes. And there's a resourcing issue. Now, is there a resourcing issue?
First of all, Stephen, I'll say to you that I agree with you. The cover on that evening was totally unacceptable. However, we were unable at the time to cover the shifts.
And does this happen more often, Brian?
We do have pressure on weekends in covering shifts. And we do have pressure because the shortfall is a consequence of two things, vacancies and people being unable to attend work.
So now that's interesting. So would the majority of weekends have problems covering the shifts, or is this very much a minority incident?
In most weekends, we would struggle to achieve full cover.
Most weekends?
We supplement and fill and help the crews by bringing in voluntary and private. That would be commonplace every weekend.
So, in one area or all areas?
Oh, no, throughout the whole of Northern Ireland.
Throughout the whole of Northern Ireland?
Yes, just as agency staff would work on wards, nurses working on wards, and the other agency staff would help the health service in at times of pressure. We would do the same. We would use voluntary and private. So,
Can I just understand this? And I'll give you room, because this is important. So what you're saying to me this morning is that most weekends throughout Northern Ireland, there is a shortage of staff and cover is not as it should be.
That's what I'm saying, that we would have shortfalls in cover and we would manage that by using voluntary and private. Now, the causes of the shortfall we are addressing also. So at this point in time, we are short paramedics. Throughout Northern Ireland, we have 432 paramedics and we are short 48. We have just received, at the beginning of the year, an investment of £5 million, which will enable us to train 48 paramedics this year, 96 EMTs who work along the paramedics, and 96 PCS staff who support the EMTs and the paramedics. That program, as soon as we received that funding in April, we immediately started to recruit and train. So that's a positive. We have also gone out to the rest of the UK to recruit qualified paramedics, and we've had reasonable success with that. And we also do use the voluntary and the private to support us. Our objective is to ensure that we, as far as possible, can achieve the planned hours.
How long?
For our staff to be able to manage the workload, and it makes it easier for the controllers to be able to deal with the calls that are coming in the system. Now, we realise that even with that, it's not enough. We have just done a big piece of work to try and identify what additional levels of cover we would need to provide a better service in Northern Ireland. This Thursday, we will begin out to consult on a new model of care, which will describe a different way of being able to manage the calls and prioritise the calls, and will also identify the need to bring in additional paramedics and EMTs in the region of 300 staff.
And another 300 staff?
Another 300 staff.
To be at a level that you think is right?
That's correct.
So are we currently 300 plus down?
We're not 300 plus down. We are, in total, we are 48 paramedics down. And that is the reasons for that. The new model, the improved and better model, a better way of delivering the service, will require an additional 300.
300 paramedics?
300 EMTs and paramedics.
But if you can't fill 48, how are you going to get another 300?
but you're not listening to Stephen. What I'm saying is that we are addressing the baseline at this point in time with the funding that we've been given, and then we will be asking for additional funding in order to recruit the 300 that we need
okay.
for the new model, should the new model be
okay,
approved.
But I am trying to walk through this slowly because, by the way, thank you for being open with us, okay? And I want to try to understand it. The 48 paramedics that were currently down,
yes.
was that due to money or was that due to you couldn't find the people, you couldn't recruit them?
It was actually due to our inability to be able to train them in Northern Ireland because of a change in the process, the registration process. So previously we trained our own paramedics in-house and they went through an accredited body. They are then registered by the HCPC. They now want university graduates. So we had to spend a couple of years designing and developing a paramedic university program for Northern Ireland, which we have done and which will start in November. And there will be 48 paramedics on that program to fill the existing vacancies.
So for the last couple of years, Northern Ireland hasn't been able to train the paramedics that we've needed.
That's correct. And that wasn't as a consequence of any change in Northern Ireland. It was a national change. Every service in the UK is experiencing the same problems.
So how long... I just find some of this extraordinary, Brian. How long have we been running a weekend service which has been significantly understaffed? Years?
We've been experiencing the pressure for, yes, a couple of years, Stephen. But I have to say that our normal compliance level so would be around the 90% of cover. And 10% we would supplement with voluntary and private.
And what does that mean, voluntary? When you say... because
okay. Well, voluntary are organisations like St John and Red Cross, who again are very well trained, competent people, who
are they trained to be paramedics?
They don't train to be paramedics. Some of them have nurses on board. Some of them have doctors on board. Some of them are just lay people who have got basic skills. We don't send them to the emergency calls. We use these people to address the lower priority calls, protecting our own paramedics for the red calls that you referred to earlier on.
Yeah, but if we are 48 paramedics currently down, then what you're saying is we need those 48 paramedics for the critical incidents that happen in Northern Ireland. So what is happening to some of us when we need a paramedic and they're not there?
Well, what we're doing, that's 11%. We're short 11%. And what we do is we use the rest of the people who are not paramedic responses to deal with workload that is safe to allocate to them.
No, I get that. But if you're saying that you need 48 paramedics, then that means that there is enough workload to need 48 paramedics.
Yes.
So what is currently happening to some of us when we need a paramedic and those 48 paramedics are not yet trained? Who's gone out to save our life?
Okay. Well, let's look at it differently, Stephen. For the number of 99 calls that we receive in the system, we currently prioritise 30% of them as being in the red category, as you've described. However, clinical evidence would suggest that only 7% of them would need a paramedic response within 8 minutes. And that's the basis on which changes that we're proposing are founded on. So at this point in time, what we do is, and I stress again, we protect the paramedic resources available and we send them to the highest acuity call.
Sure, but you either need...
Everyone else waits a little longer.
Yeah, but you either...
They wait a little longer because it's clinically appropriate for them to wait.
But you either need these 48 extra paramedics or you do not. If you need the extra paramedics, then that means there are situations where each of those extra 48 paramedics are needed. Yes. That's the logic.
And that is logic. The fact of the matter is, and this is also logic, we don't have access to to 48 paramedics.
Okay, so
that's why we're training 48 paramedics.
I get that, but because the 48 paramedics are not in place, Brian, does it mean, if I can cut to the chase, that some of us who do need a paramedic don't have one?
It means that you may have to wait longer for one.
And does that increase the mortality rate in Northern Ireland?
I don't have data to prove that, Stephen.
What's your gut telling you?
My gut telling me that I would prefer to have 48 paramedics in order to provide surety that a paramedic response is available to us. But I don't. So therefore, I have to manage the situation until we build up the levels that we require.
And Brian, I'm not blaming you here. I think this is a societal issue for Northern Ireland. It's where we put our money. It's how, when we do have a government, it's what they resource and what the forward planning is. You said that these 48 paramedics, I think some people will find it extraordinary that we don't have these paramedics because we didn't have the ability to train them in Northern Ireland. And that scheme has now been designed over the last couple of years. Yeah. I clocked in my mind, you said that those 48 paramedics are going to start their training in November. Is that right?
That's correct.
Next month?
That's correct.
How long is that training going to take?
That will take 1 year.
So for another year?
No, and don't forget, Stephen, I also said to you that we are actively recruiting qualified paramedics from the rest of the UK.
But presumably you could have done that over the last couple of years and we're still 48 down.
And we have been doing that for the last couple of years.
And we're still 48 down.
That's correct.
So what's your chances?
There is a national shortage.
Exactly. So what's your chances of filling the 48 over the next year?
We will endeavour to get as many as we can. We've just been to over to England last week at a conference and actively recruiting. So
how many did you get?
I haven't got the final numbers yet, but there was a large expression of graduates willing and thinking of coming home to Northern Ireland to work.
Is this a shocking situation, Brian, or not? I don't want to hype it, but just as a member of the public, I'm kind of thinking to myself, hold on a minute. So on Saturday night, we needed 12 emergency crews for just these areas we talked about. We only had 5. We complemented that with St John's Ambulance and other people, some of whom were lay people, not trained. And now you're telling me that we need 48 paramedics. We're 48 paramedics short. We haven't had that over the last 2 years. We haven't been able to train them because we've no training scheme in place, and it's going to take another year to train them.
Okay, Stephen, I'm telling you that it's 48 paramedics across Northern Ireland, not in one night. So therefore, and that most days of the week, we do achieve the level of cover that we require.
But if you get ill at the weekend, you've got less cover. You've got less chance. If you have a critical situation at the weekend, it's more than likely that there won't be full cover in Northern Ireland.
That is correct. Our pressure is at the weekend. And I've said at the beginning of the show, on Sunday, we had full level of cover in that area.
Okay.
No problem. So there is a pressure there that we need to work on.
Brian, thank you very, very much indeed. Seriously, thank you, because I think you've put information into the public domain today that's very important for us all to know. That's Brian McNeil, the Director of Operations for the Ambulance Service. Wow. I reckon, by the way, that interview that we just did with Brian McNeil. Now, there's an example of a public official who's being open and honest and transparent, even when there is a problem. Brian is the Director of Operations from the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service. I was going to say, I reckon that interview is highly significant in terms of the information that's now been put into the public domain. The Northern Ireland Ambulance Service now revealing that most weekends they are understaffed, that they have been short by 48 paramedics, that they've been short down a significant amount of paramedics over the last 2 years, that they have not been able to train paramedics in Northern Ireland because there was no scheme designed to train them. Like, some of this stuff sounds extraordinary, Brian give us some of the context behind it. If you want to hear the interview, you can go on the iPlayer and listen to it. We'll make sure we put the interview up on our Twitter feed. So we haven't had a scheme to design paramedics. That scheme now has been designed, but the new recruits are only going to begin their training in November, and it's going to take a year to train them. Meanwhile, if you do get sick at the weekend, it's more likely that you will have to wait longer, and there will be fewer paramedics on rota at the weekend than during the week. Extraordinary. Johnny, morning to you. 0-30-30-80-55-55 if you want to react to that. And I guess here's another example. When we talk about we need government, we need people controlling this country, we need people taking vital decisions about this country, there's an example there, Johnny, where we're now hearing from the Director of Operations that they can't fully staff up their paramedic teams most weekends of the year.
It's funny that it's at the weekends too that there seems to be a lot more incidents or a lot less staff.
Like what? Just I'm interested in asking you all as you listen to the program. You listened to that this morning. What you make of it? Are you shocked, Johnny?
Well, maybe not surprised, Stephen, because I actually volunteer with an outreach organisation. And I have witnessed firsthand the abuse that some of the paramedics receive week in, week out, from maybe drunk people or drug addicts. And while the health service surely is there for people who need help, surely it gets to the stage where if somebody's consistently calling an ambulance just to get a warm bed for a night, there has to be a cut-off point.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about here, is it? We're talking here about incidents when, you know, what the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service have told us this morning is that they have identified a need, so an operational need for 48 paramedics, which we don't have. So that does mean, Johnny, that some of us who are in a life-threatening situation, or the possibility of it at the point of the phone call, and we need a paramedic. Like, I thought that what our taxes meant was, if we need a paramedic, we get one.
Uh-huh. Need or want, but that's the thing. Because there's not a lot of people out there that may not need a paramedic, but want one. And that's the difference. How many false calls are there to the ambulance service that are not emergency? How many people repeatedly call for ambulances that don't need them?
But with
and this is going to put pressure on the service.
But with respect, I think you're missing my point, right? Because I what you're talking about, absolute valid territory for discussion. But I'm talking here about something different, in that the Director of Operations has said that there is a need. So not there might be a need, or not the amount of false calls where a paramedic arrives and they're not needed. He is saying that they have identified a need for 48 more paramedics. Mm-hmm. We haven't been able to train them over the last couple of years. Like, what was that all about? It took us a couple of years to design a scheme. Maybe that is what it takes. But did the public know that was going on? And now this new batch of recruits, they're not ready yet. It's going to take another year to train them. So if I take a heart attack, you take a heart attack, someone takes a heart attack in this country, we want the system resourced properly and well enough that we've got a chance of surviving it.
Uh-huh. The system's clearly under a lot of pressure at the minute.
Big time.
Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder, but is there any other way that could alleviate some of the pressure also?
Say again, sorry?
It makes you wonder, Stephen, are there any other ways they could alleviate some of that pressure?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it also makes you wonder, I guess the message is, well, I'm trying to very much choose my words carefully here, but I'll say nothing, actually. Here's a Ballymena caller. Johnny, thank you. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you. Now, what you're retired? What were you in the health service?
I worked in the ambulance service in the EMT.
An EMT, is that a paramedic?
No. Auxiliary to paramedic.
Okay, and what can you tell us? Thanks for calling.
Well, I mean, this situation didn't occur overnight. It has to do with planning and arranging a workforce. And what the point basically I'm trying to make is that, 4 or 5 years ago, NIOSH trained paramedics and EMTs, which they then deemed were surplus to requirements, and then basically were kicked to the curb and then sent to other services in the UK.
Really?
Yes.
Well, obviously, the ambulance service, I'm sure, would deny that, and they would say, I'd need to put that to them.
Just get them on again and ask them to deny that.
Like, were you aware of the shortage of paramedics?
Well, look, I haven't been in the service for some while now, for 2 or 3 years, but I have talked to ex-members members that are serving, and they have told me that the situation isn't getting any better.
Listen, thank you. Good morning. Declan and Lurgan. Morning, Declan.
Hi, Stephen. How are you keeping?
Doing okay, thank you. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Stephen, I was just phoning up to say it was very refreshing to have Brian McNeil on the radio. He was very candid in all his responses, and it would be a good lesson for our politicians to actually see how to actually engage with the public.
Well, absolutely. Every question I asked him, he answered it. I don't know what state of affairs we're in Northern Ireland when we're all shocked. You ask somebody a question, a public official a question, and they answer it.
Exactly, and that is an indictment of our society in which we live in, and the politicians and the political classes. It is crazy that when you ask a question, you actually get an answer.
Well, what did you make of his answers, Declan? So we're currently in a situation in Northern Ireland where most weekends, he's told us, they're understaffed.
It is. It's disturbing, Stephen. And one of the things is, well, I heard one of your callers previously trying to put it down to behaviour during the weekends. We do, as a society, need to look at our behaviour, why we need to call an ambulance. And you get all these news reports of all the mad reasons why people phone ambulances, like getting your hand stuck in a jar. But at the fundamental level, we are not funding the things that we need to fund.
I go back to the game, Declan, and I am trying to be careful this morning. But look, some of us aren't going to get through a heart attack or a critical moment in our life because that's what happens. Some of us don't make it. Despite the incredible work that the health service does in trying to save our lives. So you would hope that we're all being given, you know, when we see those taxes coming out of our wage packets, you would hope that we're all being given a fair crack to survive. And so therefore, we should not surely underestimate the significance of a director of operations from the ambulance service coming on the radio and saying that most weekends, he's short of staff. He's short of paramedics.
It is. It is truly frightening, and I can see his rationale about varieties of levels of need and things like that. But what would be interesting to see is: are we unique? Is this a common problem in DB in the Republic of Ireland? Is it a systematic problem with Northern Ireland and the way on its governance system?
Well, Brian was saying, to be fair to him, during that interview, that there is a shortage of paramedics throughout the UK, and that they've gone out to the UK to try to recruit. But over the last 2 years, we've been down staff in the ambulance service. I think by implication, then over the last 2 years' worth of weekends, we have been, in the majority of times, short of paramedics. So the big question, Declan, I would like to ask, and I don't know how you would have data around this, but how many people have died or got into very serious illness who otherwise could have been saved if the paramedics had have been on Rota, had have been there.
Exactly.
And that's why this is so important.
Yeah, I was shocked, Stephen, when I actually heard the interview. I was shocked to the core that this is actually happening and the level that it is happening. And again, I was surprised that Brian McNeil was so honest. But when it comes down to the crunch, it's like a lot of things in the country, you pay for what you want. Now, if people aren't prepared to realise that our ambulance service, our fire service, are people that we really need, our nurses are people that we really need, and if we don't pay them correctly and they're abused on a daily basis by members of the public who, for whatever reason, maybe drink, maybe mental health issues, why would anybody want to go into that profession as well? So we need to look at it as a bigger thing. Yes, it's frightening to find out that our cover is so low.
And we couldn't train paramedics for the last couple of years? What's that all about?
Yeah.
He said that there was not a training scheme appropriate to what they needed in Northern Ireland. They've taken 2 years to design it, and the new recruits are only going in next month, and it's going to take a year to train them. So that will, in other words, be 3 years without those 48 paramedics.
It's to do with strategic planning. And I work in the educational sector, and to get a course accredited takes a very, very long time. So to have it accredited in 2 years is, I would say, about average. But that's still not the point. When the new laws and new regulations were being brought in, how long did they know and how long did it take? And more importantly, and that I'll always bring us back, what did our politicians do?
Well, there's a question. Listen, Declan, thank you very much indeed. I think we'll be looking more into this story.